See ya. So we're in our limud of Hilchas Lashon Hara is, as always, the Schus Refuah Shleima of Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, Pesach Shachol Yisrael, Yishtav Refuah Shleima B'Korov. And the Chofetz Chaim, we discussed already last week, and we deliberately left out one page, because today we're going to have the opportunity to expand on it, which I don't normally have in a 5-minute slot. You can't discuss things in detail, you can only go through the basic halachas. Today we've got half an hour available, so I'm picking up on what we learnt last week and expanding on it. So, the Chofetz Chaim says, in this previous segment, by the way, I think there's a mistake here in the art scroll, which is quite unusual, I think, but let's see what you think. Says, in the previous segment, the Chofetz Chaim is speaking about the concept of Devarim Nikorim. I will introduce Devarim Nikorim again for those people only starting at 8:30. Yeah, but Devarim Nikorim basically means I've got circumstantial evidence, indications that make me believe the Lashon Hara that I've heard. There are other things around it, and I'll give examples around which make me believe it. And the Chofetz Chaim says there are two major conditions which must be fulfilled before we can apply this principle. Number one is that it must be strong and not just superficial. The Chofetz Chaim says it's very easy for the Yetzer Hara to talk a person into believing that I've got simonim, that the Lashon Hara that I heard is true. He said he wants to believe it, and he knows Devarim Nekorim, if there's circumstantial evidence, that then he's going to be allowed to believe it, and we'll discuss in the Shia what that means. And therefore, the Yetzer Hara is going to talk him into believing that these are Devarim Nekorim. Devarim Nekorim has to be something that makes it very, very clear, that's pretty certain. We discussed, and I'll mention it again, the story of the Pishka that went missing, and that sort of thing. So, where there are Devarim Nekorim. And the second thing is that the Devarim Nekorim that the person knows about, which are going to make him believe the Lashon Hara, must be first hand. I saw it for myself. Not something that I heard second hand from somebody else, that somebody else saw. Says the Chofetz Chaim says, and even when you have powerful first hand evidence of the Lashon Hara, he says, nevertheless, he said, unless there is a toyeles, you can believe it yourself, but you can't tell anybody else. If there is toyeles, then there's the seven rules of toyeles, which in Yad Hashem we're in Klal Zayin at the moment, and Klal Yud is all about the seven rules of toyeles. But we all know them pretty much, that you have to mean the Shem Shemayim, and you're not allowed to exaggerate, etc., etc. We know the rules. And then he mentions as follows here. As mentioned above, the source for the rule of Devarim and Nekorim. We need a Makor in order to allow us to believe Lashon Hara because we have Devarim Nekorim. Is a Talmudic interpretation, he says, of a story in Scripture. So it's basically a Gemara in Shabbos Nun Vov about Psukim in Shmuel Beis. He says, in that incident, King David accepted a report that Mephibosheth, the son of King Saul, was upset over David's return to the throne. So, we've got a Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth, he writes here, is the son of King Saul. And Mephibosheth, I believe, was the grandson of... Yeah, he was the son of Yehonasan. Yeah. Posuk, Shmuel Beis, Perek Dalet. Posuk Dalet. Vili Yehonasan ben Saul, ben Necher Agloyim, Ushmoi Mephibosheth. The Mephibosheth was the son of Yehonasan ben Saul, Yehonasan, the friend of David HaMelech, and Yehonasan, the brother-in-law of David HaMelech. Yehonasan ben Saul had a son called Mephibosheth. But he says here that he's the son of King Saul, and he's actually the grandson of King Saul. Sorry? I'd have to look at the later edition, yeah? Okay, we're on page 128 of the Chofetz Chaim, A Daily Companion. And the edition that I've got, there may be a later edition, it may have a correction in it. The one I've got is First Impression, September 1999. So I should imagine that they've reprinted it since then, and it could be that somebody drew their attention to it, so we'd have to look it up. Okay. Yeah, you can send an email to Askol and ask them if they're aware of the mistake. But I think it's clearly a mistake. Okay, so that's the introduction. So we're going to find out about Devarim Nekorim from Mephibosheth, who is the grandson of King Saul. I'm stopping the halacha there, and we're going to start the shiur.
Start your day at the Torahway, Northwest London, Tuesday, Kof Iyar, 35th day of the Omer, 20th of May, Rabbi Yanki Wiesenfeld Shlita, who was Tzivo. This week's Torah was sponsored jointly by family Wiesenfeld, the Nishmas of the Prime Official of the Yol Ari Yisrun of Rochov, Dixon for Rochov Antwerp, the Ziyatzai tomorrow, and by family Blachman of Red Simson Mitzvah of Ari Fisher, Neri Yoyos of the Mitzvah last Shabbos.
So our voice has Ronnie just mentioned, I'm giving this shiur in Nishmas Mashveh Zichron Levracha from official Bas Rabbi Yoel Arias, his 28th Yortzeit. And I want to thank Torahway, obviously, as always, for the opportunity to say some Divrei Torah Le'ilu Nishmosoi. This is a real Torahway shiur. It's Torah's Torahway, because it's born out of the halachas that we've been learning in Hilchos Lashon Hara, and we're developing that in a way that we can't really do in the 5-minute slot. If there wasn't Torahway, then I wouldn't have been given the Chofetz Chaim Shir, and if I wasn't given the Chofetz Chaim Shir, then you wouldn't have today's Shir either. So no Torahway, no Shir. And obviously, therefore, this Shir as well as the regular learning of Chofetz Chaim should be as a schus refuah for Yosef Dov ben Chai Lebekorov. The Chofetz Chaim speaks about, I'll give a couple of introductions and then we'll get to the actual subject of who was Tzivo. By the way, does anybody know who Tzivo was? I know you know. Yeah, but does anybody know who Tzivo was? The question was, who was Tzivo? That's the title on the. Does anybody know who Mephibosheth was?
Yeah.
You know from this morning's shiur. The Mephibosheth was the grandson of King Shaul. Okay, we'll come to all these people soon. Says the Chofetz Chaim, I'm going to do a couple of introductions. Introduction number one, generally, which is something that you all know well, and probably most of the listeners, but just a quick chazorah. There are three levels, says the Chofetz Chaim, of Lashon Hara, to the extent in which I can believe it. There's the bronze Lashon Hara. The bronze Lashon Hara is that I heard a regular Lashon Hara from one person, Me'id Echod. And he wasn't in Beis Din, and he just told me something, and the Chofetz Chaim says, I have to walk a tightrope. I have to believe, but not believe. That means I'm not allowed to believe the Lashon Hara. I'm not allowed to believe that it's true, but I'm allowed to protect myself just in case it's true. So in other words, if it's a question of going into partnership with somebody, it's a question of doing a shidduch with somebody, and I've heard some bad information about him, then I'm allowed to be choishesh, l'mei chash mi umi boy, says the Gemara. I'm allowed to be choishesh, maybe it's true. But on the other hand, I'm not allowed to believe that it is true. And the Chofetz Chaim gives an example, in this Sefer of the Daily Companion, he gives an example. He says that a person who wears a seatbelt when he goes out on a journey, he doesn't really think he's going to have an accident. He doesn't really believe that the seatbelt's necessary, but nevertheless, and I was just thinking, what happened a couple of weeks ago? Those people who were wearing their seatbelts on the plane when it dropped suddenly 6,000 feet in a couple of minutes, and one person got killed, and dozens got injured, serious spinal injuries. And when you get on a plane, the stewardesses always make the announcement and say that we recommend that you should keep your seatbelt on at all times, because you never know what might happen. So when the person next time he goes on a plane, and he's thinking to himself, do I really believe that this plane is going to drop 6,000 feet in a couple of seconds? I don't believe that. But nevertheless, I better keep my seatbelt on, just in case. Says the Chofetz Chaim, you hear Lashon Hara for one person, then you don't really believe it, but you have to protect yourself and take precautions just in case. So that's your bronze. What is the gold standard Lashon Hara? Gold standard Lashon Hara is pshat that I have, he could be a Rosh HaMafurasim, who said that I'm hearing about, or that there are two Eidim who've come to Beis Din, and they've given Eidus, and Beis Din have done their Drishas V'Chakiras and established that the Lashon Hara is true. Or I saw somebody myself doing something where there's no chance of being Don L'Chavskus. He's doing something, my standard example, he's eating a Big Mac beef burger in McDonald's, sizzling with hot cheese on Yom Kippur. Chances are that he's doing an Avera. It's something that's before some lakoid, yeah, and I've seen it myself, then of course I've seen it, I'm allowed to believe it. Says the Chofetz Chaim, the Chofetz Chaim introduces that there are three categories of silver, Loshon Hara, in between the two. And they are, the first one was Mehemon Kibetre. I hear something from somebody who I believe impeccably, that I don't believe for a second. He's the Godel Ador, he's the Rosh Hashiva. He's somebody who I really, really trust impeccably, that he wouldn't say a word of a lie, but I've only heard it from one person. The other example was Masiach Lefi Tumoy, somebody who's not speaking, and we discussed all these, they're not our subject for today. Masiach Lefi Tumoy means a casual remark. He wasn't intending to speak about the subject, but a remark was thrown in, and again, Chazal allowed Masiach Lefi Tumoy in order to be Matir and Aguna. We discussed that already last week. Our subject today is Devorim Nikorim, circumstantial evidence. I believe that what he's telling me is true because of other things that I've seen, other things that I know, or other things that I've heard, whatever it is. And we'll give examples, Yirat Hashem, soon, of Devorim Nikorim. And circumstantial evidence, Devorim Nikorim, is our subject for today. And there the halacha is, again, it's in between. In the first case where I heard from an Eidecho, just the Loshon Hara, I'm allowed to protect myself, I'm not even allowed to believe it. Just take precautions. In the third case, I'm allowed to believe the Loshon Hara, and I'm allowed to take action against him. Where I've got 100% proof in a Beis Din that this man has committed this terrible thing, whatever it is he's done, then you're allowed to hate him, and you're allowed to take action against him, and if it's money that he owes you, you can be toifis, v'chule, v'chule, because that's been established beyond any doubt. The middle bit, says the Chofetz Chaim, is that where there are Dvarim Nikorim, where there are circumstantial evidence, the situation indicates that what he's telling me is true, then I'm allowed to believe it. I'm allowed to believe the story completely, not just to be choishesh, and obviously to take precautions, but I'm allowed to believe the story. But nevertheless, I have to then, I can make inquiries, I can take him to a Beis Din, I could force him to make a shavua, I could go to the police with it, etc. There are things that you can still do, and also, if I know Dvarim Nikorim, it's possible that I might be able to resent him in my mind. Normally, you're not allowed even to do that. But nevertheless, so it's an in-between sort of situation. As I said, it's the silver standard, Loshon Hara, the in-between Dvarim Nikorim. Okay, give you a couple of examples. One example we discussed already, the Chofetz Chaim gives it in Be'er Ma'im Chaim, in his parish on the Chofetz Chaim, was where I invite a guest to stay with me. There's nobody else in the house, just me and him overnight. And he stayed with me overnight. In the morning I took him to shul, I brought him home, I gave him breakfast, and he packed his bags and goodbye. And then I discover that the pishka is missing. The Ramel Balanes Pishka is missing, or jewellery is missing, or silver's missing, or whatever it is, and there is no sign of a break-in, there's been no burglary, and it definitely was there yesterday. Today it's definitely not there, and therefore I'm 100% sure, in my mind, I'm 100% sure, but there's circumstantial evidence. I didn't see him take it. If I would have CCTV cameras, and I can look on my CCTV, and I see him coming along in the middle of the night, you know, with a mask and a bag over his shoulder saying swag, and he comes and he steals it, then I've got proof. If I would have to aid him, I would have proof to aid him in Beis Din, not to aid him outside Beis Din. But otherwise, it's circumstantial evidence. But nevertheless, I'm sure the situation. I'll tell you a story that I had in my own work as a surveyor. Two neighbors, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven wants to build an extension. It's not a big extension. It's not really going to affect the neighbor. But the neighbor's a grumpy old man. Yeah, and he and his wife say, we're going to fight you with every means at our disposal. And they go through the whole planning process, and they speak to the councillors, and eventually the planning permission is refused. So he has to go to appeal. And he has negotiations with the planning officer. And he has to reduce the size of the extension in order to try and get it through. And it goes through a long, long process. Of course, the second application or on the appeal, these people are represented as well. And they try and get it prevented. It could go through. Sometimes these things can go on for years. And eventually, Reuven got permission to build his extension. Reuven got his permission to build an extension, despite every effort of the neighbour to try and prevent him from building. And you know, and he didn't even think it was justified. all these objections. But nevertheless, these are Ma'asim B'chol Yom. We all know about it. Now, Reuven did something else which is Ma'asim B'chol Yom that we all know about. What did he do? He built the extension a bit bigger than his planning permission. And when he started doing that, one of his friends said, "You're mad, you're crazy. Your neighbor is going to muster on you. He's bound to muster on you. He's so bitter about the whole thing. You're bitter." I mean, they don't speak to each other because it cost him a 10-year delay, and it cost him thousands of pounds in consultants' fees and new plans and all sorts of things. Yeah, so they don't speak to each other. They're brokers. So now he's taking a chance. Yeah, his neighbor's going to muster on him. Fine. So he says, you know, "I hope it'll work out. Well, Rabbi Nishlam, you know, put money in Mebel and this or whatever people do. Yeah. And Levi Yitzchok and Soros Achweis, they do all this. What's going on?" And he says, "I hope it'll be all right." Okay. So one day, he's looking out in his back garden in the evening, when everybody's sort of, it's already quite dark, and he sees his neighbor with a tape measure, yeah, measuring his extension. And he knows that he's in trouble. Yeah, he knows that he's in trouble. And he goes and he decides the only thing, he's worried now that obviously the neighbor's going to muscle him, and then he's going to have to take down the extension. It'll cost him a fortune with enforcement. Anyway, he's very upset, doesn't know what to do. In the end, he goes to the neighbor's Rav. He goes to the neighbor's Rav, and he says, "This is the story, and this is what I saw. And as far as I'm concerned, Devorim Nikorim. That, you know, you can't have better Devorim Nikorim than that. Right? This guy's out to get me. And could you please, you know, maybe you could speak to him, and it's going to cost me a lot of money. I know I shouldn't have done it." Okay. So the Rav speaks to him. He calls the neighbor in, and he speaks to him, and he says to the neighbor, "You know, your neighbor's very worried after the whole story." And the neighbor says to him, "You don't understand." He said, "I actually got used to the extension. I quite like it, and I want to build the same size." He says, "I'm also good. So I told my architect, I sent in the plans of the neighbors, and the architect told me to take a few measurements. So I was measuring up the length of the wall." He said, "I'm actually going to build as well. I'm not going to mass him." So you can see there, he had Devarim Nikorim. He was sure that the neighbor was going to mass him. He was sure that the neighbor was a Rosha. And in the end, I've got friends who had Baruch Hashem a burglary, and they made a massive claim, and all the jewelry was taken, etc. They made a massive claim, they got paid out, Baruch Hashem, Shalom al Yisrael, and then a few months later they found some of the jewelry that they claimed. Yeah, and they were convinced it had been stolen. They didn't do a false claim. They were convinced that this jewelry had been stolen. They knew where it was, and now it isn't there, b'chulei. And in the end, they what's called, and actually they were very honest, they contacted the insurance company and offered to return the money. Okay, so these are Devarim Nikorim. These are examples of Devarim Nikorim where I see from the circumstances, I know this guy is a ganav because nobody else could have taken the pishka. I'm sure that my neighbor is going to muscle me because he's measuring up and he's made me so much Taurus until now. So the question is now, so these Devarim Nikorim are going to enable me to believe the story. It's one level up from not believing and only being lemechash. So the question is, where does it come from? And the Makor of Devarim Nikorim is a Gemara Shabbos Nun Vov, and it's the story of Tzivo, the title of this the title of this shir, and Mephibosheth. So let's run through a little historical background. It'll only take 2 minutes, and then we'll get to actually this parasha from which we're going to learn Devarim Nikorim. Okay, Shaul HaMelech was the first Jewish king. He came from Shevet Binyamin. He didn't kill Agog. Rabbi Shem said to him to kill Agog, and he didn't do it. And therefore, he was told that Korah Hashem es Hamamlocha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken away your melucha, it's going to someone else. You're no longer going to be the king. His son is called Yehoinasan, and he was the best friend. His son-in-law is David, who became eventually David HaMelech, and they are best friends. Yeah, as we all know, the Haftorah of Mocha Chodesh. Shaul and Yehoinasan were both killed by the Plishtim in Har Gilboa, and that is in fact the final parsha of Shmuel Aleph, where Shaul and Yonasan are killed. There's nobody left of the royal family except the son of Yehoinosan, who we'll discuss soon, who is a grandson of Shaul HaMelech, son of Yehoinosan, whose name is Mephibosheth. Dovid HaMelech became the king. Afterwards, Shlomo HaMelech became the king. And after Shlomo HaMelech died, the kingdom split into Yehuda and Yisrael, the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom. Rehoboam, the son of Shlomo HaMelech, was the king of Yehuda. Yerovam became the Melech Yisrael. And Yerovam was a Rosha, and he set up the idols in Beisel and Don. Yeah, was it? I think so. Anyway, he said the idols know that the Klal Yisrael shouldn't go to be Oile Regel. Okay, now let's look at the Psukim to help us to get to this point of the Makor of the Gemara. The Gemara is discussing about whether or not Dovid HaMelech Choto. Did he commit any sins? And the Gemara speaks about Uriah Hachiti, and the Gemara speaks about the possibility that he did or he didn't sin. And then the Gemara says, David kibbel Loshon Hara. The David accepted Loshon Hara in the story that we're going to discuss. It's a Machlekes Rav and Shmuel. Rav says David kibbel Loshon Hara, and there were terrible consequences as a result of it. Shmuel says he was not Mekabel Loshon Hara, because what he heard, he had Devorim Nikorim. And because he had Devarim Nikorim, circumstantial evidence, to believe it, therefore he wasn't over any Issa Loshon Hara in believing the story. Let's have a look at the Psukim. Won't go through the Psukim at length because it takes too long, but just to give you the flavor of it. Shmuel Beis Pasuk Dalet. Yehoinos Aven Shul had one son who was Nechei Ragloyim, who was in a wheelchair. Ben Chomesh Shonim Hoyo, he was 5 years old, Bavoy Shmuas Shol v'Yehoinosan Yisrael, when they heard that Shol and Yehoinosan had been killed in the battle with the Plishtim. And Vatisoeu Umanatoi, and his nurse quickly picked him up and ran away in order to try and save his life, that the Plishtim, they shouldn't get caught by the Plishtim. And unfortunately, on the journey, she dropped him. And he was a child of 5 years old, and she broke both his legs. And he ended up having broken legs for the rest of his life. He was in a wheelchair. He could not walk for the rest of his life. And his name was, it says, Vatonois, they ran away. Vahi b'chof zolonos vayipol vayiposeach. He fell and he became seriously injured. Ushmoi Mephibosheth. So remember, Mephibosheth, grandson of Shaul, son of Yehoinosan, he's unable to walk. Okay. Now, Dovid HaMelech became king. Shaul HaMelech has died in the battle, and Dovid HaMelech became king. Vayoma David, and David said, this is in Shmuel Beis, Perek Tes, Aleph. Hachi Yeshoi Dashanois Ale Beis Shaul. Are there any remnants? Are there any people left over who belong to the house of Shaul, my father-in-law? Ve'esa imoy chesed ba'avu Yehoinosan. And for the sake of Yehoinosan, my friend, I would like to, maybe not for the sake of Shaul, who wanted to kill him, who wanted to kill his own son-in-law, but for my friend Yehoinosan, I'd like to be mechabed if there's anybody left. Ulebeis Shaul Eved, now we come to the house of Shaul, there was a son, an Eved, he was an Eved Kanani, Ushmoi Tzivo. Tzivo was an Eved Kanani who belonged to the house of Shaul. And this Tzivo had built himself up. He had 20 servants himself, and 15 sons. So he'd built himself up. He was quite a well-established person. And he had a kedrait in the circles, in the royal circles. Yeah, and he said to David, and he came to, and they called him over. And the king says, Ha'atot Tzivo, and he said, Avdecho. And then the king asked him, is there anybody left of the house of Shaul? Vayomit Tzivo HaMelech, Oid Bein Lehoinosan. That there is still alive a son of Yehoinosan, Nechei Raglayim, and he's physically challenged. Vayomer HaMelech Eifahu, where can I find him? I'd like to treat him well. Vayomer Tzivo HaMelech, he's in the house of Bochi ben Amiel, and then he said, Beloi Dovor. Now, Beloi Dovor, according to most of the Mephoshim on the page in Nach, means there was name of a place. There was a place called Loi Dovor. And he was in Loi Dovor, Loi Dovor actually it says, yeah, Loi Dovor, in the house of Moche ben Amiel. Vayishlach HaMelech David, and the king sent for him. Vayovoi And he took him from Loi Dovor. The Gemara dashens that Loi Dovor doesn't only mean the name of a place, or doesn't maybe not even mean the place, but that Tzivo talked Mephibosheth down. Tzivo said, Loi Dovor, he's nothing, he's a nobody. It's not somebody that you should get involved with. You're asking about a descendant of the house of Mephibosheth. You think you're thinking of royalty. You're thinking of somebody important. This is, yeah, he is a grandson of Shaul HaMelech and a son of Yehoshaphat. But he's physically challenged. He can't walk. And Beloi Dovor, he has nothing to offer. He's a nobody. He's no one. Says the Gemara. Then it says, and the Melech David, he brought him to him, mi Loi Dovor. Yeah, it says the Gemara, he discovered that he was a big Talmud Chacham. He was important. He was somebody to reckon with. And therefore, yeah, it turned out that he knew firsthand, and this we need to remember, Al Sadvarin Mekorim, he knew firsthand that Tzivo is a liar. That the Gemara says that Tzivo spoke Sheker. Tzivo told him Sheker and told him that this Mephibosheth, the grandson of Yonason, is a nobody. And in fact, he was a big Talmud Chacham. Okay, let's move up to our third source. What happened then? Dod HaMelech is the king in Yerushalayim, and his son Avshalom rebels against him. And he turns half the country against him. And Avshalom is marching on Yerushalayim in order to depose his father and to become the king in Yerushalayim. And David HaMelech was worried that if there is a battle taking place in Yerushalayim, there will be a lot of civilian casualties, a lot of collateral damage. And therefore David HaMelech decided to leave Yerushalayim and sort of to take the battle out into the countryside, so that if he has to face Avshalom in battle, that it won't be in a place which is densely populated. So he went out of Yerushalayim, and unfortunately, he was on foot. It says, the Gemara says, the Pasuk says that that he was on foot and that he had no, he was Roshei Chofui and he didn't have any food, and there is a few people with him. They were very, what's it called? They were very, they didn't have equipment. It says, V'dovet oyle b'male azesim, oyle b'oichev Roshei Chofui, that is, his head is chofui, I'm not quite sure what that means. V'hoi lech yochev, he was barefoot. V'cholo oma she'itoi, chofui ishroishoi, v'olo olo v'ochoi, and they were all crying. They were in a really, really bad situation. They were out in the countryside, they didn't have supplies, they didn't have anything. And then, it says as follows. It says, where is it? I thought I marked up the posuk. I'll find it for you in a second. Yeah. Tesain, posuk alef. Dovod ova ma'at me'orosh, vehine tzivo na'am afiboishes likrosoi. In this situation, he meets Tzivo. And what Tzivo's coming along, temet chamorim, he's brought donkeys, and he's brought Mosaim Lechem, Umeya Tsumukim, Umeya Kayetz, Vedevel Yain. He's come with camels, with donkeys. He's come with food supplies and everything. And he goes up to, and David HaMelech then asks him, who are you? I mean, he knows who he is, but he says, why are you coming? And he says to him, Mo'e Leloch, and the Tzivo says, I've brought you supplies. I've come to support you. I've come to bring you donkeys in order that you can ride. I've brought supplies for all your officers, etc., etc. Lecho hanorim v'yayin lishtos hayoyef b'midbor v'yayin ma'amelech. And the king said to him, and where is Mephibosheth, your master? V'yayin mesivel ha'melech. He's in Yerushalayim. He's not in the house of Amiel. He's in Yerushalayim. Now, the Tzivo says to him as follows, I've come to support you because I'm on your side, I'm looking after you. But Mephibosheth is in Yerushalayim and he's hoping that there will be a battle and Avishalom will get killed and you will get killed, and he's waiting to say that he's the next in line to be the next king. So he's in Yerushalayim biding his time, and he's hoping that things will, you know, that maybe the people will rebel against Avshalom. Avshalom will kill you, then the people won't like it, that you kill the king, etc., etc. And Avshalom will, both Avshalom and David will die, and he's there because he wants to be the king. That's what's happened to my master. So that's the next story. But David HaMelech knows that he is a liar. Because David HaMelech knows from previous story of Lo Dovah that we learned that Tzivo doesn't have a Cheskes Kashrus to believe in the story that, fine. Eventually what happens is Avshalom is killed and David HaMelech is able to return to Yerushalayim. And in Pasuk Shmuel Beis Yotes, he returns to Yerushalayim and he's met by Mephibosheth. And he sees that Mephibosheth v'loi osa raglov, v'loi osa sefomoi, v'es begodov loi kibes, min ayoim lech samelech ad ayoim ashabob ashon. So he sees that Mephibosheth appears to him dirty, untidy, dishevelled, long hair, unkempt. And this is ki ein lovayel shah melech b'levush sok. This looks like a bit of a chutzpah. It looks like a sort of a rebellious thing to do, to appear in front of the king and not to tidy yourself up, clean yourself up. That you appear in front of a king properly dressed. And he said to Mephibosheth, how dare you appear in front of me looking so disheveled, looking so dirty and untidy. And Mephibosheth says to him, and don't forget, he's got in mind that Tzivo has told him that Mephibosheth was in the palace waiting to become the king, hoping that David and Avshalom would be killed. And Mephibosheth says, no. He says, you don't understand. He says, from the moment that I heard that Avshalom was rebelling against you, and I heard that the king had to run away from Yerushalayim, I can't eat, I can't drink, I've let my hair grow, I'm behaving like a mourner, like an ovel. I did this lechvoid amelech. The reason why I look like this is because I felt so bad for you. I felt so bad, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink, I couldn't wash, I didn't go for a haircut, I couldn't. This is why I look like you, like this. I look like this because I'm on your side. Chas v'sholom, what? I mean, theory, yeah? Tzivo had told him that he's waiting there to become the king. And Deval, now, says the Gemara, basically, we're going to run out of time. But the Gemara says that David HaMelech doesn't know who to believe. David HaMelech doesn't know whether to believe Tzivo. Tzivo said that my master is in Yerushalayim and he's waiting to what's called. He doesn't know whether to believe Mephibosheth. The Mephibosheth is, well, he did various things as a result of it. We got that he gave some initially when he heard that from Tzivo, when he came with all the presents and with all the food and the donkeys, he gave Tzivo, and he heard that Mephibosheth was waiting to become king, he awarded Tzivo all the property of Mephibosheth. And then afterwards, when he's now facing Mephibosheth, and he doesn't know whether Mephibosheth is telling him the truth, that he was really upset about him, or he wasn't upset about him, therefore now he says, okay, in that case, the property of Mephibosheth should be half to Tzivo, and half to... He did things, yeah, as a result of the circumstances that he saw. And the Mephoshim go through at length. There's a long Mashor, and there's a very long Be'er Ma'achayim on the Chofetz Chaim to try and identify exactly what the Devorim Nikorim were. But what Rav and Shmuel were arguing about was, yeah, that Rav says that he was Mekabel Loshon Hara. And Rav says, as a result of that, that's why the kingdom split, and that's why Golidu Mi'atzeinu, that's all in the Gemara in Shabbos. And Shmuel HaMelech says, no, Shmuel says that David HaMelech, sorry, that, that, yeah, Shmuel says that David HaMelech saw Devorim Nikorim. And as a result of the Devorim Nikorim, the indications that he had from the behavior of, from what Tzivo said, from the behavior of Mephibosheth, from the fact that Mephibosheth didn't come, from what Tzivo said about Mephibosheth, and then Mephibosheth appearing in front of him, unkempt and disheveled, that he acted on that as Devorim Nikorim and he was not Mekabel Loshon Hara. He wasn't Mekabel Loshon Hara. That's the Gemara that gives us the Makor. So the Makor for Devorim Nikorim is The Kofat of Arnakorim is from that Gemara, according to Shmuel, that David HaMelech didn't do an Aveira. David HaMelech loy chotoy, didn't do an Aveira of Lashon Hara, because acting on what he heard was because of the Devarim Nekorim that were attached to it as well. And that's why the Chofetz Chaim says that Devarim Nekorim, it's anyway a machloikas in the Gemara. He says you have to be very, very careful not to use Devarim Nekorim in order to establish, if you like, in your own mind, the truth of a Lashon Hara, except in very, very special circumstances. So Yerotzayn, let's finish off with a brocha, that B'schus HaChizuk and HaShmira from Lashon Hara, that Rav said that because of Lashon Hara, Golinu Me'atzeinu, that the Rabbi Nishayim should bring the Shvuyim back home, and we should be Zoicha to be as Mashiach, but may or may not make.
Thanks.
The odds has tomorrow.
Okay.